This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Wong Xiaoning. This is the time of day when we break into a sprint, don't we, Wong? Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk to Dr. Ahmad Faizal Perdaus of Mercy Malaysia on the flooding situation on the East Coast. But before that, markets.
Which was a rather nice day in the US. So the Dow was up 0.7%, S&P 500 up 1.5%, and NASDAQ was up even more, up 2.6%. Meanwhile, if we look at Asia, in fact, there was only one market down, which was the Hang Seng Index, down 0.5%, but the rest of the region was in a lovely shade of green. Nikkei was up 1.6%, Shanghai up 0.7%, Straits Times Index in Singapore up 1.5%, and our FBM KLCI up by 0.7%.
Yeah, and that NASDAQ surge, in fact, the market surge saw Elon Musk is now officially the richest man in the world. But in the meantime, let's talk to Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP. And Carlos, thank you for talking to us. Now, the Fed says that it's committed to its asset purchase until it sees substantial further progress, quote unquote, in economic recovery. When is that likely to happen and what would be indicators of that recovery?
Good morning. So we are seeing a bit of a U.S. sort of rally taking place as Biden has been announced to be the next president officially. We do see that could continue, but heading into sort of the thick of 2021, the secular long-term trend is going to dominate the session. And our secular view for the U.S. is that although we do expect to see growth to 4% in this year, that's mostly a result of a base effect. There will continue to be weakness on the US dollar front and on the economic performance front, as it will take a little bit of time for the economy to bounce back to pre-COVID-19 levels, given the magnitude of the impact of the measures in that market. Now, the Fed is going to look at two key gauges. In addition to looking at inflation, they're also targeting unemployment now. In order for them to start hiking interest rates again, most likely they will want to see inflation above 2%, quote unquote, for a significant period of time. They've already said that they'd be comfortable with inflation overshooting 2.5, for example, for a short period of time, if it's just due to base effects in 2021. But if it's over 2% for a significant period of time, then they have to, of course, start to hike again. And the other thing is unemployment. And the natural unemployment rate in the US is considered to be 5%. So it would have to drop to around 5% for a significant period of time. And again, given the magnitude of the impact of the measures, we don't think that it's going to happen in 2021 either.
Now that the conundrum regarding the Senate has been finalized, what is your sense of the Biden administration's stimulus program? And what effect will that have on inflation, which some observers say might be a rising specter in the coming months?
All of the measures that have been announced are pro-reflationary measures. They're stimulus measures. They're measures that aim to boost income levels for lower income households. And all of that together should contribute towards a pickup in inflation. So we are pricing in an increase in inflation in the US. Not to worry from a monetary policy standpoint, because the Fed has already sort of said that they would be okay with that. But of course, it does have an impact on inflation. Now, previously, it was not clear. It's still not clear, but it's a little bit, there's a bit more of an ongoing debate at the moment of whether the Senate will be dominated by the Democrats or the Republicans. In the case it's a Republican Senate, then Biden, of course, would have less sort of firepower to forge ahead with his stimulus plan. If it's a Democrat Senate, then we do expect that stimulus bill to be a little bit stronger, which will be more reflationary in 2021. But remember, that also means that Biden will implement higher corporate taxation in 2021 or in 2022. And that measure is the opposite. So it will sort of later on have a negative impact on inflation if he does go ahead with the proposed tax hikes in addition to that stimulus.
And staying on the U.S., right, we did see U.S. 10-year Treasury yields hit 1%, the highest since March. So what is the market actually telling us about that?
We expect U.S. Treasuries to continue around that level, maybe a little bit higher, around 1.2%. And as I just mentioned, there's going to be a rally post-election. So post-January 20, typically after a U.S. election, and especially if you have a Democrat Senate, we do expect that things could pick up a bit. But then that long-term secular trend is definitely going to kick in. And remember, for the U.S. Treasury yields and the U.S. economy, we have twin deficits. So we have a very large fiscal deficit of about 15% of GDP. You have a current account deficit as well, in contrast with a current account surplus in the Eurozone, because Germany, of course, is a big exporter. And they're working on deals with other parts of the world, excluding the U.S. as well. And you have very large public debt that is about 150% of GDP. We expect it will be about 150% of GDP in 2021. And that needs to be serviced. So it's unlikely that they're going to hike interest rates aggressively because it would make it very expensive to service that debt. Together, that means that the narrative for the U.S. dollar after this election transition period is over, it remains subdued, relatively weak. And that suggests that the US dollar will remain the pressure and also the US Treasury yield will not go up significantly in the medium term, even though in the short term, there's going to be a lot of optimism surrounding Biden.
Yeah, Carlos, switching to Europe now, what are the positive effects, if any, on European financial markets from the EU-China Comprehensive Agreement on Investment? Any ancillary benefits as well for other Asian countries?
I'm a little bit lukewarm. So this deal is, of course, has been in the making for 7 years. I think both sides were under a little bit of pressure to deliver something, especially the Europeans had a deadline, so they wanted something out in the open that they could use for further negotiations. And China, of course, they've already signed a deal with ASEAN, so this would be one more geopolitical victory for them this year. In terms of the actual implications, not much. I mean, it would be much bigger for Europe if this translated into a trade deal with China. That would be a significant impact for Europe. For the time being, it predominantly more of a safety valve for China. They plan to become more self-dependent as part of the next 14th five-year plan, but they're still they still need access to foreign tech and to be able to purchase companies that work on the tech space. And of course, Europe is one of the main recipients of Chinese outbound foreign direct investments, once you take into account that a lot of it is rerouted via Hong Kong. So it's important for them to keep that avenue open in the coming years. And Europe is, in a way, provided that. But it's not going to translate into significant upside on the economy unless, again, this leads into a trade deal. And in terms of potential spillover effects for other Asian countries, well, it's definitely good news for all of the economies in Asia that are embedded in China's electronic manufacturing chain. And of course, Malaysia is one of the main ones, together with Philippines for certain types of components, Japan and South Korea. So it's good news for all of those countries because it means that at least things are going to, you know, there's not going to be a sharp disruption in supply chains, which could have happened if the EU and the US both aligned on a China strategy, on a containment strategy. But it seems not to be the case, which is, of course, good news for those economies going forwards because it means that the transition towards self-sufficiency will be a little bit more smooth.
Okay, Carlos, thanks you so much for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong. Interesting, especially on the US dollar front. I guess the policymakers are okay to have it to have the greenback remain weak, but you just imagine so much money in the system and more coming. There were some concerns. A question which I asked Carlos about inflation. The ordinary American, you know, can't cope with the COVID already, let alone rising prices across the board. And I think a lot of the rental moratoriums, eviction moratoriums are ending as well. And a lot of question marks about how 2021 is going to shape up for the average Joe on Main Street.
Yeah, but I don't think inflation has reared its, well, some would say ugly, but not so ugly head, depending which side of the fence you're on. You know, because there really hasn't been that significant economic recovery. You've had this very low base effect and then a jump, but we are nowhere near pre-pandemic levels in any country, even here in Malaysia, right? So it's some time off before inflation becomes a concern, and with inflation comes, of course, the interest rate hike, which equity markets dislike tremendously. And then there are question marks again after that will it be a taper tantrum. But I think we're still some time off. The other indicator that Carlos says that we have to keep an eye out on is unemployment. Because if unemployment manages to come down to 5%, then that's one thing that the Feds will be looking at. And then, yes, maybe interest rates will slowly creep up. But we are now at a Fed fund rate of 25 bips. I mean, it's going to take a while for them to even get to 1%, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, when you give sugar to a baby, how difficult is it to take that sugar away, right? Let alone 320 million people. So tightening rates has never been an easy task, let alone from basically near zero. I think we've got time for one news item about how the Department of Justice in America has fined Boeing $2.5 billion to settle criminal charges with the U.S. Justice Department. I think this revolves around the airplane, the 737 MAX, that was involved in two crashes, claimed 346 lives. I looked at the Boeing share price, no response.
Yeah, I think because the markets already expected this.
It's
priced
in way before.
It's already priced in way before. And even then, the price crashed on the back of these unfortunate air crashes. And then on top of it, aviation is a sector that you don't really want to be in this current economic, in this pandemic climate. There are not that many planes flying around. But I think what is significant is the prosecutors in America said that Boeing knowingly and willfully and with intent to defraud, conspired to defraud the United States. Says a lot. And by undermining the Federal Aviation Administration's ability to evaluate the safety of the plane. What does this say about Boeing's management?
I know, especially when you consider in the world, there's only two basically plane makers that produce aircraft that are taken en masse, right? The other one being Airbus.
You would think that safety would be the main
paramount
priority,
importance.
Right? And yet you knowingly and willfully intended to defraud. Uh-huh. Says a lot.
Yeah. Okay, just very quickly, Bitcoin has nearly touched $40,000, now $38,700, but Ethereum also having their time in the sun.
I can't breathe. It's just too much.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's like Elon Musk's share price.
Worse.
Going gangbusters.
And I how do you value
how,
this?
Why, when,
which
where,
we will
what?
Find out later at 7:30, actually, because we will be discussing that.
Okay, don't go away. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.